Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Today is Byron Brown's first day as president and CEO of Western Regional Off-Track Betting, following Tuesday's departure from the mayor's office in the city of Buffalo. That space is now occupied by acting mayor Chris Scanlon, who inherits a projected budget shortfall of over $40 million. While offering few specifics, Scanlon projected confidence moving forward.
But we've got to bring additional revenue in the door. It's no surprise to anyone. I have several different ideas on how we can bring revenues in the door while not impacting negatively our most vulnerable residents.
Prior to his departure, Brown ordered the implementation of signs honoring four Buffalo Trailblazers and established a new Office of Gun Violence Prevention. The financial picture for Erie County appears to be on more solid ground. That's according to Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz, who on Tuesday unveiled his proposed budget for 2025. The spending plan includes increased budgets for libraries, investments in SUNY Erie, and another $2.6 million for improvements to county parks. The spending plan comes with a planned reduction in the county property tax rate. The budget requires approval from the Erie County Legislature. And the Buffalo City Mission is looking to raise $2.1 million in its annual fundraising campaign. Officials say the request comes as homelessness rose by 37% in Erie County over last year. The City Mission served over 152,000 meals last year. It's the aging Buffalo storm sewer system, often blamed for the region's poor quality, appears to be in line for a major upgrade. Plans will be unveiled later this morning for what is being called the Queen City Clean Waters Initiative. The Buffalo Sewer Authority says it will spend over $1 billion over the next 15 years to address the nagging problems that have negatively impacted Lake Erie, the Buffalo River, and other local waterways. Acting Mayor Chris Scanlon, Jill Jedlicka from Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper, and others are expected to join Sewer Authority officials for a 10 a.m. press conference at Freedom Park. Niagara Falls police are investigating an altercation that left a man dead on the street early Wednesday morning. Officers responded just after 2:30 a.m. to 287 Hyde Park Boulevard to find the victim, who had been struck by a vehicle, which then fled the scene. That suspected vehicle was located unoccupied in a nearby alley. Anyone with information on the incident is asked to call the Criminal Investigation Division at 286-4553. And the University of Buffalo is partnering with Brothers of Mercy on an effort to examine the region's expanding population of aging residents. The Aging and Resilience Research Center will open today at the Brothers of Mercy Wellness Campus on Ransom Road in Clarence. The goal of the facility is to work with Brothers of Mercy residents to conduct pilot studies aimed at determining the factors that make one person more resilient than another. One of his last acts as Buffalo mayor before announcing his resignation yesterday, Byron Brown issued an executive order establishing the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. WBFO's Holly Kirkpatrick has more.
In the order, Brown states that the office will work side by side with the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention to bring best practices for law enforcement and community-based intervention strategies to Buffalo. The new office has been created in response to the events of May 14, 2022, when a gunman killed 10 people in a racially motivated mass shooting at the Topps grocery store on Buffalo's Jefferson Avenue. Buffalo Common Council member Zanetta Everhart has been a leading proponent for the Buffalo-focused office and introduced a resolution for its creation in July. Everhart's son, Zaire Goodman, was one of three people injured in the 514 attack. Brown says there has been a significant decrease in gun violence in Buffalo, with shooting incidents down 28% in 2023. Holly Kirkpatrick, WBFO News.
Hi, I'm Emily Watkins, and this is the WBFO Disabilities Beat. October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, a chance to highlight disabled workers' rights and address barriers to employment. WBFO's freelance disability reporter Mason Auld recently spoke with the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network's Director of Advocacy, Zoe Gross, about the barriers neurodivergent people face in seeking employment. The Autistic Self-Advocacy Network advocates for equity and inclusion for autistic people. This conversation has been edited for length and clarity.
So for autistic adults and other neurodivergent adults, the rate of unemployment and underemployment is really huge, and the barriers begin before you start the job. So they begin during the hiring and interview process. A lot of the time, interviews for jobs, they have to do more with whether you can make the interviewer feel good during the interview than whether you can demonstrate the skills necessary to do the job. And if someone can't connect socially with the interviewer may choose not to advance them in the hiring process, may put them down as something called a bad cultural fit, which essentially just means I don't feel good socially with this person, or may, for some other reason, their bias may kick in and they may decide the fact that they don't click socially means the person isn't right for the job. And unfortunately, that being stopped at that step prevents a lot of autistic people from ever beginning a job.
What causes some of these barriers that you were describing, and how do you think employers can tackle these barriers?
Sure. So I think there's several things that cause these barriers. And one is the idea of professionalism. The norms that make up what we think of as professionalism are really very based on, they're kind of for the comfort of people in power, right? So, for example, like I said, someone working in retail may be viewed as unprofessional if they flap their hands. Someone working in an office job may be viewed as unprofessional if their shirt isn't tucked in. Another thing, of course, that underlies these barriers is prejudice against people with disabilities. So ableism. Ableism leads us to view the showing the traits of a disability as wrong or like morally wrong, that if you have a disability, it's an obligation on you to hide it. If you can't hide it, then you just don't deserve the same opportunities as non-disabled people get.
What resources exist already for neurodivergent workers?
Some workplaces now have hiring programs specifically for neurodivergent workers. These interview processes that have been changed to be more friendly to neurodivergent applicants, they focus more on do you have the skills that are necessary to do the job? So you can demonstrate the skills in the interview. It may be a more like a longer process. There's more seeing, what the person is able to do that matches the needs of the position. It being just about, how slick is your answer to questions like what's your greatest weakness as an employee or things like that. And then what we want to see in these places is not only is there that way to get neurodivergent workers in the door, but that's matched with a commitment to providing accommodations, a commitment to changing workplace culture, to making a workplace more accommodating and friendly to autistic workers and workers and other neurodivergent disabilities.
What do you still think could be improved in order to expand that job market and increase employment rates for neurodivergent adults as a whole?
So there's a lot of things. One thing I forgot to mention that's a significant barrier to employment for autistic people is requirements like having a bachelor's degree for certain jobs or even having a high school diploma for certain jobs. People who are in special education throughout high school sometimes don't receive a diploma. Sometimes they receive what's called a certificate of participation. And this is a discriminatory aspect of the school system. Everyone should receive a diploma if they go through, if they graduate high school. But sometimes this doesn't happen for special education students. Similarly, there's a lot of barriers for autistic people accessing higher education. And we often can't, complete a bachelor's degree, even if we try or even if we have a lot of the relevant knowledge for reasons like lack of accommodations, for reasons like difficulty with independent living on college campuses. So things like that can present barriers as well. So just like when people are talking about disability hiring, they talk about the fact that it's ubiquitous in job applications to have the requirement, even for something like an office job, that the person has to be able to lift 25 pounds. And there's no real reason why this person whose only job is to work on actuarial tables all day has to be able to lift 25 pounds. But it does have the side effect of discriminating against disabled applicants. Similarly, requirements like what kind of degree do you need, that can discriminate against disabled applicants.
You can listen to the Disabilities Beat segment on demand, view a transcript and plain language description for every episode on our website at WBFO.org.
The Bills ended their losing skid and made a major trade. The Sabres begin a three-game road trip tonight, and the Mets and Yankees continue their quest toward the World Series. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 16th. After suffering losses in the offseason, Bills fans thought the team would have to take a step back this year in order to take a leap in the coming seasons. Despite that narrative, Buffalo has proven that their window to compete for a Super Bowl is still wide open, and this week they proved it's just as open as it was the last few years. On Monday, the Bills won a penalty-laden game against the New York Jets 23-20. Despite giving up a Hail Mary touchdown at the end of the first half and Tyler Bass missing two kicks, the Bills prevailed, and with the win, took a 2.5-game lead in the AFC East Division. Each division winner is guaranteed a playoff spot, so that's all that really matters to Buffalo in the regular season to set them up for a chance at their ultimate goal. With a 4-2 overall record and two wins over divisional opponents, the Bills looked to be in good shape just a third of the way through the season. But general manager Brandon Bean felt it wasn't enough, so he went out and traded for Cleveland Browns wide receiver Amari Cooper, adding to Josh Allen's arsenal of weapons. Cooper, 30 years old, is a 10-year pro in the NFL, spending time in Oakland, Dallas, and the last 2 years with the Browns. This move rewards Allen for his career-best start to a season. Even through some tough stretches of poor passing during games, Allen has opened this year with zero interceptions in the Bills' last 6 games, a stretch never before accomplished by the gunslinger. By making this trade so early in the season, the Bills give themselves one thing that's crucial down the stretch: repetitions. Allen and offensive coordinator Joe Brady now have 12 weeks to integrate Cooper into the offense, find what works for them best, and deploy it when each game matters most. Not that Brandon Bean necessarily cares, but this trade also helps Buffalo steal the national headlines a bit, as it came just hours after the Jets finalized their acquiring of former Raiders receiver and Aaron Rodgers' old pal from Green Bay, Devontae Adams. The Bills will return to Buffalo to play at home for the first time in 4 weeks as they host the 1-4 Tennessee Titans Sunday afternoon. After making national headlines during practice over the holiday weekend, the Sabres return to action tonight, opening a 3-game road trip in Pittsburgh. On Monday, Buffalo took to the ice for their first practice since grabbing their first win of the season over the weekend. Early in the practice, Peyton Krebs and Captain Rasmus Dahlin got into a battle in front of the net, where Krebs allegedly got his stick up high on Dahlin. Later on, Dahlin threw an open ice body check at Krebs, leading to both teammates tossing their gloves and trading a few punches. Once their teammates broke up the skirmish and practice concluded without further incident, Krebs and Dahlin both laughed off the clash, saying they're both competitive on the ice and good friends off the ice. The reaction to the fight was boisterous, as former players and analysts across the hockey world gave their 2 cents. The prevailing sentiment was one which I happen to agree with. Given the lack of competitive nature which the Sabres have played in recent years, if the adage of "you play how you practice" is at all true, this is a positive for the youngest team in the NHL. The Sabres take on the Penguins in the Steel City tonight before heading to the Buckeye State for a meeting in Columbus tomorrow. They wrap up the week in Chicago on Saturday. The New York Yankees jumped out to a lead in the ALCS on Monday, defeating the Cleveland Guardians 5-2 in the Bronx. Behind stellar pitching, the Yankees took advantage of numerous Cleveland mistakes, scoring 3 runs in the third and not looking back. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton each belted home runs to secure the victory for the Pinstripes. Last night, New York took Game 2 at home 6-3, giving them a 2-0 lead in the series. The Yankees got to work right away as they built a 3-0 lead, forcing 2 Cleveland pitching changes in the first 4 innings. With a 4-2 lead in the seventh, Aaron Judge delivered a 2-run homer, giving the Yankees all the insurance they would need. The ALCS heads to Cleveland with the Guardians hosting Game 3 on Thursday night. Out in Los Angeles, the Dodgers and New York Mets split the first 2 games of the NLDS, with the Mets taking the second game 7-3 on Monday. New York's bats were hot to open the game, with Mark Vientos blasting a grand slam in the second inning, giving the Mets a 6-0 cushion early. The series shifts across the country to Flushing, New York for Game 3 tonight. First pitch is just after 8 p.m. This has been the Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 16th. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sports.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.